Hello, everybody. Hey, this is Charles. You're listening to Bring It All Back Home. New episode for you today, all about the Rolleiflex MX, part of that Automat series. And yeah, I can't wait to jump in. Really, in a way, returning to Rolleiflex. You maybe hear, you'll hear me say Rolleiflex or Rolleiflex. I think it's cool in the U.S. to say just Rolleiflex, but technically, I guess it's not pronounced that way, but I'll probably goof up and pronounce it both ways. But yeah, the Rolleiflex is something I really want to talk about. So yeah, this episode is all about returning to Rolleiflex, jumping back into the entry level of the Rolleiflex, specifically the versions known as the Automats, what to expect, and how it's going for me now that I'm back home with Rolleiflex. All right, so where to begin? Looking back through my Lightroom catalog, I discovered that, yeah, this journey for me with the Rolleiflex goes back to the winter of 2018. That seems like a million years ago, but I guess not. It's not really that far back. I wanted to make a switch to something lighter. I had been a fan, huge fan, of the Mamiya series of TLRs, the 6x6 stuff from Mamiya. My journey with them was essentially a really clean version of a C33, so a nice 60s, hunkin' big, bellows-oriented 6x6. And yeah, part of me was always really skeptical about the Rolleiflexes because they seemed like a nightmare to get repaired. Meaning, there's this legendary guy out in California named Harry, and his wait times, even 6 years ago, were legendary. You know, like 6 months or something, you'd have to wait before you would get your camera back. And I'm sure the prices since then have like tripled to get your camera CLA'd, let alone repaired properly. But as one does, as you're approaching the months of November, December, and January, you know, that urge was there to take a gamble and in a way just find a budget, you know, find a way to see if I could pull one in at a price for Rolleiflex that was somewhat reasonable, meaning like $200, $250, $300 tops. And I believe I was able then, I couldn't bring it up on my emails, don't know why, but I believe I was able to get in really, really cheap. I think it was like $230 before shipping and tax. And what I liked about it was the camera had a lot of character. Again, this was the Rolleiflex from the early 50s, I guess 51. And yeah, it was known by two or three different names. But yeah, it's a proper Rolleiflex, not a Rolleicord. So this was the series they called the Automat, referring to how the film feelers, they call it. These little rollers sense when the backing paper changes over to the actual film so that you wouldn't have to rely on loading it a particular way and hoping for the best. And essentially, they removed what had previously been this little window to help you discover when that backing paper disappeared. So yeah, it was a kind of a new system where you basically rolled the film as you normally would. You shut the back, and then it automatically knew to stop at the proper point and get you to the one to start shooting. For some reason, Rolleiflex is never officially named one thing or the other. So this is equally discoverable as the Rolleiflex MX, not to be confused with a later model, the MX EVS, nor to be confused with an earlier model, the Automat 3. So if you put them all together, if you just throw all the words in, this is a Rolleiflex. This is the one with the lens that is a 3.5 aperture. This is the MX version, the X referring to that it could use the X-Sync flash. And it's part of the Automat series, so it's sometimes just called the Automat MX. Alternatively, though, if I could say that properly, alternatively, you could also see it listed as the Model K4A X-Sync. So there. Anyway, it's an old Rolly from 1951, extremely light. This guy is barely a hair over 2 pounds, and it's small and it's compact, and it truly can fit in your pocket. You know, if you've got a relatively large pocket in your jacket or an inside pocket, say in your jean jacket, you could just put the camera right in there and keep going. Something unthinkable and literally impossible with the much heavier and much bulkier, but still cool for performance and results, Mamiya stuff, you know, the C33s, let alone the C3330s. So that's a little bit about the back history. I got in with the first camera 2018, November. I'm still seeing some of the photos here. They look lovely. This is from the fourth or fifth roll with it. As one does when you find an incredible deal that you're way happier with than you thought off of eBay, the natural tendency is, let me get another one. let me have two so that if one craps out, I could keep going. Or again, maybe just go out shooting with two different, completely different style films, you know, color versus black and white. My original was very beat up as far as the leatherette goes. It was really showing its age. Little pieces were missing. Other pieces had turned this interesting kind of copperish brown. It was not functional when it came to the actual shutter release. So the little silver button on the bottom right side, which you used, of course, to take your photos, was not functional, meaning it, instead of it having a strong, natural, springy, efficient click, instead it was like this mushy, and then eventually you'd hear the shutter go. So yeah, meaning that long throw, as it were, would also throw off in some ways your balance on the camera and could essentially impede you getting a sharp photo. So yeah, original Rolly, was super happy with the results, not so happy with the shutter release. So I had to pivot, as they say, and purchase a cable thread release. So when I would go out with my little Rolly, I would have my relatively little thread release, and I would just screw that in, and that would be the way I would carry it. I would pretty much just have a little dangling thread release. And of course, I was packing it up in a bag. I would unscrew the thread release so it doesn't get all bent up. And yeah, I would pretty much 99% of the time shoot it with the thread release shutter, because it would be really difficult to shoot it without waiting for that shutter release to actually go in the normal way. What also, though, became an issue, not so much when I first got it, but it sort of got worse over the years, was just simply changing shutter speeds, let alone changing the aperture. The camera really needed a CLA. It needed to be tuned up indeed. So essentially, like, just getting from 3.5 to f/8 or f/11 was like cranking it with your thumbs. You know, like the resistance was so strong that, you know, you'd sort of get a blister on your thumb just moving the dial. What else? And yeah, the viewfinder wasn't exactly bright. So I knew that. So basically that, but what, oh, and lastly, how was the taking lens? How was the viewing lens? It was okay. Meaning the results were just fine. But if you actually looked at it, it definitely had a little bit of haze. It didn't seem to have fungus, but there was no way was this a clean version of a quite old lens. You know, again, 1951, I got mine in 2018. This guy was getting up there, getting close to 70 years old. What I discovered when I tried to get another copy, so the first copy also was the Zenar lens, the Schneider, Koichnach, you know, the Zenar, X-E-N-A-R, Zenar. And that lens was phenomenal, even in the condition that I received it. But I found another camera, also the same model, but it was using the Tessar. So there's two different lenses, the Tessar versus the Zenar. And yeah, that one definitely had more issues. The whatever was going on with the lens, it never achieved the clarity and the sharpness and the 3D pop that the Zenar did. So I basically sold off the Tessar, or I returned it. I think I just passed it on and sold it. I forget. And just stuck with the Zenar. So it's 2019, 2020, 2021. I had that Zenar rocking out. Let's see, when was the last time I had this guy? I guess I had this until 2022 in the spring. No, 2022 in the summer. So that's a pretty long journey, you know, I guess, November of 2018 to the summer of 2022. So definitely got a good workout with that lens. All of 19, all of 20, good 4 years with that lens. And I'm seeing at least, 25 rolls, maybe 30 rolls I shot with it. Looking through the results, they were fantastic results. They were really, really great. And did I need to sell the camera, you know, in 2022? In some ways, I think I did, and I don't regret it. The biggest problem I was having was that now that I'd had it for a full 4 years, its shortcomings... It's, you know, thing with the shutter release, always having to use the threaded cable, always being, you know, kind of fighting me to just change the shutter speeds and the apertures, the f-stops. But mostly part of me kept thinking, is this lens just getting worse every year? You know, I think at the time I was getting kind of hung up on just the hints of the haze. Which and the last roll I shot with it was a roll of color film I shot with some 400H Fuji, and I don't think I was that thrilled with the results. I typically on that camera at least got much more interesting results just using good old black and white, you know. So looking through the black and white pictures now, you know, they still look pretty darn good. But, you know, it's sort of like once an idea gets stuck in your head, like part of me, I think it just at some point after 4 years went, I really am losing all affection for this camera. And it's kind of taking me back to the same scenario I was in when I was using the Mamiya C33, which is love the results, not too fond of just using the camera because it's not really up to speed. Okay, so basically 2022, I was definitely going through a little bit of purging, kind of just cutting it back, looking for stuff that was just pure fun, you know, the impulse buy that was fun, that was cheap, or, you know, moving on from certain cameras I thought that I would never, ever, ever sell, you know, cameras that I thought would just be in my possession forever. I thought I would never sell the Rolleiflex. I thought I would never sell my Leica 3A. My Barnack, and I did, and I don't regret either one. I don't regret selling either one. But what's happened since is that I have had a craving for 6.6 again, without a doubt. Definitely a craving for 6.6. And so I kind of went on that whole journey again, you know. And so if you guys are, you know, listening to what I just said in a way, like, in other words, what's ironic about being into the analog gear and is that you may eventually just start repeating yourself, meaning I'm going to sell this camera and I'm going to sell that lens. And then 3 or 4 years later, it's like, I kind of want that camera again. I'd really like to find that lens again. You know, so it's sometimes you just don't know how much you like something until you miss it, right? I kind of went on that journey literally again. I got a Mamiya. So what's the date on my Mamiya here? I guess I'm getting my dates a little bit mixed up. I had tried a different Mamiya that was possibly a tiny bit lighter, the C330, in 2019. And yeah, didn't keep that very long. Sold that one back off in probably about 2 or 3 months. So now it's 2024, you know, we're just into the new year. And yeah, there's a part of me that really wants to scratch that 6x6 itch and just get back to that album cover graphic, you know, and that wonderful 3D thing that I always recall with that Schneider, with that Kreuznach lens. There's something glowy about it. Like, it's a terrific freaking lens. You want to talk about character, you want to talk about resolution, and when you think about it, you know, if you can get it combined with a relatively working Rolly or Roli, you know, you're in great shape. So was I ever tempted to just get out of this entry-level price point and go all the way for a 2.8 version of the Roli, which immediately will set you up. Not automatically. So there's a 2.8T series, which is still relatively affordable and cheap. You get the upgraded lens, but you don't get the upgraded body, as it were. So it was kind of like they were mixing sort of the Roli cord build with a faster lens, and that's the beauty of the 2.8T, and a lot of people swear by it. But yeah, part of me was like, why go backwards? You know, like, why would I go back toward a Roli cord style body when I've been used to using for 4 years a proper Roli Flex, right? So my goal was not to just upgrade. I did not want to suddenly go into what people refer to as the 2.8 series that costs a ton of money. I was not going to go there, you know. I was not going to go for the newer Rolis that had built-in metering. Basically, I was not going to jump into a $500 or $700 or $1,200 Roli because it's just the pure fear of what happens when it needs a CLA, when it needs a repair. I don't have the patience to send it out for somebody and wait 6 months or longer. And the repair costs typically for these things are probably in the 500 and up range right now, which is just insane. So yeah, I wanted to kind of stay with the maybe I'll get lucky with an automat thing. And the good news is I got way lucky. So yeah, basically I want to break down for you what I did get on this auction and maybe just round out what I did not get. Because when you're going in for the automats, you've got to be prepared probably 99% of the time, most of the time, for something not working, especially if you're going to get it in the $200 to $250 to $300 range. If you have somebody out there selling an automat, whether it's this MX or the MX EVS, and they're like, yeah, I just got it CLA'd from the Harry dude, and it's got a, you know, flawless mint condition lens, and X, Y, and Z is going on with the shutter transport, the film transport and all the rest, then yeah, it is absolutely worth $500 or $600 or more, in my opinion, because it's most likely just going to run like a charm for another 20 years. On the other hand, if, like me, you're just trying to get lucky with an entry-level MX automat that is listed around $200 or $300, just basically look at it like this is going to be a gamble. All right, so what did I get? My version had been listed by a seller in Florida. He had originally been trying to get closer to $300 for it, and he said he's selling it for a friend or a friend of a friend, and he just kept lowering the price. And I was about to pull the buy it now on it just around New Year's, and I decided to hold off, which I'm glad I did, because he lowered the price again. And eventually, I think I got it, what was it, for like $269. And it came in the mail extremely well packaged. And when I saw the lens, it was just like a homecoming, because it has the most mint freaking version of the Zenar lens I've ever seen in person. So yeah, like the lens looks like it's never been through anything. I mean, it looks like it was kept like in a properly climate controlled environment, not in a bag with too much humidity, you know, not in the original case where fungus is eventually going to grow, but it looks like it was just kept in a room, maybe in a glass case or something. It's insane. There isn't even any dust inside this lens. There isn't even the slightest hint of haze, let alone any kind of marks. It is absolutely mark-free on the surface. That alone is astonishing, because normally you're going to have like a little bit of a cleaning mark, or if you hold it really, really close up to the bright light, you should see some kind of minuscule, you know, not a scratch, but minuscule mark, zero. And it is absolutely pristine. So I'm like, yeah, the lens is insane. The guy had basically said in the ad, yeah, this lens looks fantastic. Like, there's nothing to note of anything negative with this lens. And so now, as I'm recording this podcast, I'm holding it up in my left hand, moving it back and forth in the light. And yeah, it's astonishing. It is astonishing. And even the viewing lens is in fantastic light, shape too. That's got a tiny bit of dust, which is expected. But yeah, the taking lens, the Scheiner Kreuznach Zenar 3.5 75 millimeter, is glorious. Insane. So that would make you suspicious, right? Because you would think, you know, well, you've got a taking lens that'll blow away anything you're going to find on eBay, typically, let alone something from Japan. So what's the deal? Well, the focusing works. That's fine. The viewer, you know, opening it up and looking through the waist level finder, you know, you guys hear that? That's fine. And that's bright, much brighter than the last one. Changing the aperture and changing the shutter speed is glorious. A huge difference from anything I had before. Just, it feels perfect. So, cut to the chase. I'm like, I gotta go shoot the first roll, you know? So I load my film and I close the back. I'm in such a rush, I don't even advance the film yet. I just get out of the apartment and I immediately start walking down toward street level. And I'm like looking down at the back going, oh, wow, I never even advanced the camera. So I begin to start advancing the film in the camera. And I notice the first problem. And really, it's the only problem, but it's a major problem in the sense that you need to come up with a workflow to get around it. So what's going on, which I later discovered is a major common failure, is what's going on is the camera is fully functional. The shutter speeds all work and all sound terrific. The lens is pristine. The film loads properly into the camera. But what's unique about the Automat was that it was a series of cameras from Rolleiflex that should be able to detect, you know, with these sensor rollers, the film sensor rollers, it should be able to detect based on the gauge, the thickness of the paper, when to sort of, you know, change and start the counter and basically start going through the rolls. And if it doesn't, well, then that's a common failure, unfortunately, for these cameras. So I literally found an article from one of the major repair guys, Mark Hansen, and I put it in bold here. I have my notes. And he's referring to, as a technician, you could take a look and analyze the film transport mechanisms with something called, ready for this, feeler gauges. Feeler gauges. and a film spool. So with your feeler gauges and a film spool, you can run the film through a little bit and start making these different detections about whether or not it pinches the feeler gauge and the counter resetting. But anyway, cut to the chase. I put this in bold so I could, you know, the most common failure is the film winds all the way through without starting the counter. And however, the converse also happens where the counter starts when the back is closed. And either way, it will need to be adjusted. So pretty much the first one's what's going on with mine. So essentially what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to load the film a little bit. You put the film under the main roller, which when you ever look at a user group about the automat, they're like, are you sure that you put the film under the first roller? Because it's not intuitive. It's not something you would look at and go, of course I'm going to roll this film under the roller. But yeah, the idea is you put it under the first roller and then over and then, you know, into the take up spool, wind on a little bit, close the back, wind on about 4 or 5 full cycles. And then you'll see that you're at one. You know, you're at one. And before you get to number one, what you're not seeing is the number zero. So essentially, once you close the back and begin those four cycles, you see it move out of zero into this sort of like nebulous looking, you know, in between counter where no numbers in the frame. And you'll feel the tension suddenly change. And yep, the counter will be at one. What's happening with mine is that it will just keep winding without ever affecting the counter. So once you close the back, no matter what's going on, it resets the counter to zero. And as you begin to roll on, thinking it's going to stop and move to one, it just rolls on. Next thing you know, you've used up 16 shots and you haven't shot a single one. It essentially has the counter mechanism and the way the film transport are not communicating properly. So again, major common failure. It's out of calibration. It's not starting the counter mechanism. And if you didn't really understand these cameras very well, you may just think, well, I'm absolutely effed. You know, like I'm going to have to send this camera back. And meanwhile, I'm like, no freaking way am I going to send this camera back. Oh, and by the way, I didn't mention the body is in terrific shape too. The leatherette is completely crisp and nothing's peeling and nothing's turning orange or burnt brown. Not that really matters, but yeah, it's in very nice shape, but nothing compares to the lens. Like I said, I'm just astonished to see a taking lens on what is now a 70, almost 75 year old camera, you know, 73 year old camera, in such incredible shape. So the trick for me was just trying to figure out, okay, I can get around this. So what I did was I went back on YouTube and I watched another YouTube video of somebody teaching you how to use the Rolly as if you've never picked it up before. And it was a really, really cool video because they were going so slowly. And he's like, yeah, so now that you're on frame one, I'm going to take a picture. And the camera is showing him advancing and then turning the opposite direction and taking the next shot, advancing, turning the opposite direction, taking the next shot. And I could get a clear image of just how long is that journey? Meaning when you crank to get to the next shot and reset the shutter mechanism, how long is it? So in my head, I'm thinking, oh, it's got to be a full circle, or maybe it's a circle, maybe it's a full revolution and a half. And I was completely off. So luckily I went back to the video, shot another roll, and yeah, essentially it's just like a half turn, you could say, or really like a 3/4 turn, you know. So when you begin advancing the film, you know, you're going to flip up the advance mechanism, and it kind of lies diagonal to where it originally was resting. So you flip it up and you turn it back, basically like about 50% of where it was before, and then you stop about midway. So I described it to myself. I even took a little picture, left a little bit of gaffer white tape where I need to stop. And then to make it a little bit more confusing, the idea is as you get halfway through the roll and as you get down to the last couple of shots, the idea is it won't let you go the full distance. The distance to advance the film gets shorter and shorter. But I figured I could just guesstimate that. So I shot a roll of film, another one, you know, after I discovered the first one was having all kinds of issues, basically not taking any pictures. And it came out great. It came out wonderful. The only thing I was missing was two frames, which I'll be able to finesse as I continue to use the camera, meaning I just had not advanced it enough before it took the first shot. So I was a little bit awkward with that. But yeah, basically, it's not going to be a big deal. When I load up the camera, all I'm going to do is load it up until the backing paper just begins to disappear and the first hint of the actual film is ready to come on up. I'm going to close the back and I'm just going to advance maybe two or three times, maybe four. I'm going to get it down to a science eventually. And then just count off the roll, count off the frames. Like this is shot one, this is shot two, this I'm on shot six. It doesn't have to be perfect, but I want to be able to, you know, anticipate that I'm getting near the end. So essentially the counter does not work. The counter's going to be stuck at zero. And I have to figure out a way to manually crank it. And it's not rocket science. Like I said, it's just about imitating where it would normally force you to stop, you know? So out of all the problems I could have with a camera this cool, having this one is actually kind of fun. You know, like it's going to give me a little bit of a chance to flex my way into loading it and advancing it and then just having to just keep track of how many pictures I've taken. So it's no freaking big deal. But yeah, I'm absolutely, you know, like I can feel an irrational tug when I hold this camera. It weighs 2 pounds. The lens is spotless. I was extremely happy to see the results again. So yeah, the results, and this was just a little test roll around my building where there was still some sun. I would be out shooting with it right now, but of course, this is the week where the snow stuff's begun and the sky is completely gray. But yeah, I'm really, really thrilled with it. I hope you guys, if you ever have a chance or an urge to jump on the Rolleiflex train, just be prepared that what you're going to get, you know, could need a repair, let alone just a simple CLA. And just understand that, yeah, these guys are, there's quite a few out there, but they're all going to run the risk of having some kind of mechanical issue. And for me, you know, I think like the least too important would be, you know, this issue with the automatic transport, and even really the issue which I had before with the shutter release, having to always use the cable threaded release. Those two you could live with. What I couldn't really live with after a while was just having the shutter speeds be so difficult to change. And oh yeah, I think I forgot. I was pretty sure that those shutter speeds were kind of off anyway. You know, so the beautiful thing with this is the test roll I did where I was shooting it at 60, 125, 250, and I think I did one shot at 500. They all look great. They all came out terrific. So yeah, that's my journey. I am rolling back into the Rolleiflex land. Extremely happy, and I feel very, very grateful that this guy landed just the way I kind of wanted it, in the sense that it came in under budget, and it really delivered on the aesthetics, you know, on the idea of having seemingly a brand new lens in a classic 1951, you know, Rolleiflex. So yeah, really, really cool. And yeah, that's pretty much it for today's episode. I've got another one I'm hoping to finish soon about another eBay just extravaganza that I've been on where it was completely unplanned. But the weather just hasn't been cooperating. So I want to go out and finish maybe two more rolls and hopefully come back with that. So I should be ready to roll with that next podcast soon if the weather cooperates. And anyway, keep shooting, guys, and I hope you're having fun with your gear.